The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. Michael Parker and D Program on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Greetings, truth seekers, paradigm busters, new world order, civil disobedience, freedom fighters, free thinkers, higher mammals, good people of all types. How's it going? It's Michael Parker coming to you as always from an undisclosed location somewhere in Los Angeles, California, the myth maker for civilization. And I hope that you are having a great day or evening wherever you are. We got a big show for you today. In the first hour, we'll be joined by Nikki Gosar. We will be talking about her arguments for the death penalty here in the U.S. And in the second hour, we'll be speaking to Jimmy Jenkins, who is a hemp farmer in Florida. We will talk about his turn from being a criminal lawyer to farming hemp and what that is like. We'll also have a couple of reports from John Matlin. And before we get to all that, the big news today, our buddy, bring it to Jerome Powell at the Federal Reserve, spoke today. The market is liking it, and he confirmed that smaller interest rate increases are likely ahead, could start in December. We kind of thought that might be the case after 4 months in a row of 0.75 basis point increases. It's like, Jerome, dial it down a little bit. So even though he was cautionary about monetary policy and saying that it's likely that they will stay restrictive for some time, we might get a smaller increase in December. And that's kind of already baked into the market. I think everybody was kind of expecting a 0.5 increase. So we'll see what happens with that. He also mentioned that supply chain issues at the core of inflation have somewhat erased. I don't know if he's not heard about this possible impending rail strike or not, but that's what he said. He also talked about the labor market still out of balance, and job openings outnumber available workers by 2-to-1 margin. And, you know, so if you're looking for a job, I guess right now is a good time still. I still have a hard time believing all the job figures, but that's what they keep saying. And that is part of what we base our inflation rates on. So we'll have to go with that. Another thing before we get to John, I have a quick Elon story to go with the Elon stories that we're going to speak about with John. This is one of the most interesting threads on Twitter that I have seen in days. And it comes from a person named Brian Rommel. And this is very interesting. If you remember that photo that Elon posted a couple of days ago on his nightstand, it was two handguns, four Diet Cokes. One of the guns was in a gun box that had a picture of George Washington crossing the Delaware. And when I saw the photo, I thought, well, this is odd. And Elon's drinking way too much Diet Coke, if in fact that's even his desk and his guns. What I didn't notice is what this person, Brian Rommel, points out. And Brian is a writer, a thinker. He writes for Forbes, Huffington Post, Newsweek, Slate, a whole bunch of things. And he said, while most of the world is distracted, I see symbolism that is always present, and you and I will decode it. This is a Vajra. And so if you look in the left-hand corner of that picture that Elon posted, you'll see this device or this small thing that I actually didn't even notice the first time around. And that particular device apparently is very important in many, many ancient cultures. And he goes on to say, the Vajra, I hope I pronounced that right, the device goes back over 30,000 years from the Vedic and Sumerian cultures. And it's a model for kind of a free energy lightning device for casting lightning about. So why in the world would Elon have one of these on his desks? And I started looking up what this symbol is. It says the Vajra symbolizes the properties of a diamond, or indestructibility, and a thunderbolt, irresistible force. It is a literal ritual object associated with Tibetan Buddhism. So a lot of people are wondering, so what kind of message is he trying to send here? Is this something about energy? Well, we know that Tesla is an EV automobile manufacturer. What is he trying to say? Is he trying to say, defend yourself? Look to heroes like our George Washington? Are you prepared to be armed and rise up? Or does this energy object that he's posing, what does this mean? So it's all open to interpretation, but it's an incredible thread. And if you look up this Brian Rommel person on Twitter, you'll find it. The one thing that I thought of after having read this is Elon, obviously incredibly intelligent man, incredibly savvy in many ways. Part of me wonders, A, if he's trying to send a signal in using this ancient Vedic Buddhist symbol, or B, is he simply being provocative, putting things out there for us all to look at and then ponder? Either way, I'm impressed. If you missed your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We are also on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, TuneIn. There's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT radio.
Headlines as they happen.
Every day, something new.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Continuing on, Twitter has become the hottest topic in the news for weeks. Elon Musk's purchase turned the social media landscape upside down, and it seems the secrets may start to be revealed. Here to discuss it is our friend and TNT news producer, Mr. John Matlin.
All right, here we go. The outlast, we're seeing crazy things in the mainstream media. The outcry is never ending. Governments around the world, big tech, the left as a whole, everyone losing their brains suggests something very big may be coming. As we know, we have reported Musk intends to go public with internal information pertaining to things like censorship, psyops, and all the things that went wrong under what we now call Twitter 1.0. Hunter Biden's laptop story was shielded from the masses via a cover-up allegedly involving the FBI working with social media companies to censor it. Couple that with the mainstream media narratives, and only recently, they had admitted that the story was true. Only recently. New York Times admitted earlier this year that this was actually a real story about Hunter Biden's laptop. CBS just admitted it as well only a few weeks ago, as we discussed here. The curtain of The Wizard of Oz is soon to be pulled back, at least a little bit. And we will start to go down the rabbit hole of deceit. Musk tweeted on November 28th, quote, "The Twitter files on free speech suppression soon to be published on Twitter itself. The public deserves to know what really happened," end quote. Now, watch this escalate. Reuters tweeted yesterday, quote, "Twitter is not safer under Elon Musk, says former head of trust and safety." So then Elon Musk then jumps right back into the comment discourse by saying, "Twitter has failed in trust and safety for a very long time and has interfered with elections." My, oh my. Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah. So does it stop there? Yeah. No, it doesn't. The EU issued a threat during a video conference that if Twitter does not adhere to their strict rules, it will be banned. Remember the outcry when President Trump wanted to ban TikTok, which actually spies on Americans' locations? Well, that doesn't matter compared to this. So that can get that free pass, but Twitter exposing the dark secrets of social media? No way. If he doesn't adhere to EU's new Digital Service Act, Twitter can be banned in Europe or face fines of 6% of global turnover. Sounds like many may be using VPNs to do a workaround. And they may need to do that on a web-based app because the actual app on the phones may disappear from app stores shortly. With rumors of bankruptcy being a real possibility in the future, is Musk exposing it all before a possible bankruptcy? Let it go down with the ship? I don't know. We know those in control of countries, media, and big tech are collectively losing their minds. And only way that this charade would have ever fallen apart was if the richest man in the world bought their way in and set the truth free. Regardless of what you think of him and his motives, there's a lot to question. We just don't want the tea to spill. We need it. We need all the information. So as of November 23rd, the Twitter COVID misinformation policy was axed and tens of thousands of accounts may be reactivated as well, all driving the pressure further. The echo chamber is disintegrating in real time, and all of a sudden, there is a chance that debate will ensue freely. But let us see. Much is unknown. We go day by day, but this may lead to epic exposures of historical levels. All of this while folks like Fauci, Psaki, and FBI agent Chan get deposed under oath. These releases in themselves may perjure them. I am excited as a truth seeker, but how about you, Michael?
I'm excited too. And, you know, it's really something when a man comes forth with the means to set the truth free and it is attacked by the left and by major media outlets. I mean, it says a lot that these people, it angers them that he would allow free speech and truth to the, and Apple, which I'm probably going to talk a little bit about in the second hour. It's like, you know, the idea that they would drop the app from the App Store, and these people are really showing their true colors.
Absolutely. And when this initial suggestion that he would purchase it was announced and he was bullying them into having to sell and they were trying everything in their power not to sell, as the actual company was losing money daily at a crazy rate and still is. Mm-hmm. And you wonder why they wouldn't want to sell. Why not? Why would you ever try not to sell that company? That is the question right now. And yeah, we all thought that they would find a way not to let him in because then the secrets can be exposed. It could happen. And that's what seems to be happening right now. And that's what's petrifying them. They never, ever would have had a way out. This would have never gotten out unless, like I said, somebody crazy enough to buy it. Now, we don't know all his motives, but there was no way that Michael Parker and John Matlin were going to be able to infiltrate and get all Mm-mm. the secrets out. And Mm-mm. somebody has to be that crazy with their money and take such a risk that all of a sudden everyone goes, well, how can we stop him now? And that's what's happening. They're doing everything to cancel him, to discredit him. And we're going to talk about that more next hour as well, how that tactic is employed by so many. It's the way to stop the story. It's the way to make things go away.
They absolutely did not want to turn over the market square to someone who was not under their control. And Elon, I've seen people talking about this, and you know, you and I talk about Elon a lot. I'm very entertained by Elon. I've said in the past, I don't necessarily trust him. But the fact is, you have to judge the man by his actions, and his actions actually have been pretty much in our favor. I have to applaud him for this. And I don't know if you were able to hear a bit of my news story at the top of the hour, but that photo that he showed the other day with the guns and the Diet Cokes and all that. Do you remember that photo? Okay.
I did not see the photo myself.
Yeah. Several hours after posting that photo, he also posted another tweet that said "Power to the people," with little lightning bolts on each side of it. So I don't know if he's waxing metaphysical or what he's doing, but I think the man actually believes in setting the truth free, and I applaud that.
Yeah, and it's a very scary time to set the truth free, and they can't just go and kill him. So the conspiracy side of me would say they would go and kill him. But again, if they kill him before the truth comes out, then everyone knows that there's something so sinister behind. And maybe that's why you're showing a picture of a gun and the power to the people, because this is somewhat of a revolution, a technological revolution. But this is huge. And whether you're saying, and now you'll have the people that'll say, oh, well, this is some other PSYOP and he was placed there to do this, to create that. It very well could be. There's so many different ways that this plays out. It's almost like, and I've been saying this since day one, why everything has to be done peaceful, because everyone's like, oh, well, you need a revolution to change it all. Yes, but that's what they want. And when you have countries with militaries, it's going to just be a bloodbath at the end of it all. It's not like the old revolution. It's almost impossible for the people just to take on and win by themselves. This is a game of brain at this point. It's a brain game. So it's like everything that's coming out of China is showing like, yeah, get out in the streets. Let's do it. And the end result is always martial law and a bigger grasp of power, cancellation of elections and things of that nature. So I always say this is all going to be won by us just sitting here speaking truth and not bowing to it. And that's the only way we properly win.
Well, I hope that you're right. The thing in China, and I was going to talk about this a little bit in the second hour, where Apple basically disabled their use of AirDrop, which was what some of these Chinese protesters were using to be able to speak to each other, which I think just looks awful for Apple to do that. And but these people are showing their true colors. Elon, on the other hand, this rascal, he goes and buys the public square, and now he wants to allow people to actually talk freely. Imagine that.
Imagine that. And this whole entire AirDrop feature and Bluetooth messaging, you know, you could kind of get an idea of this in 2020. Well, I was in the middle of the Max Public House saga that was exactly ongoing 2 years ago at this very moment. And they were arresting Danny Presti for going into his restaurant and opening in defiance of these of the draconian lockdowns and these mandates. And we actually installed, all of us that were in the team had installed on our phones a Bluetooth messaging system in case the cell phone systems go out or if there's interference, just so we can communicate with each other who's in the bar and who's on the outside, being that there was very strange occurrences ongoing and there was a whole ton of danger that we essentially were in. And that's exactly what Apple helped China stop. They stopped the people from being able to talk to each other.
Shameful. John Matlin, thank you for the segment. We will catch you again in the second hour and pick it up from there. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will talk with Nikki Gosar, and we will be talking about the death penalty. She puts forth a pretty good argument for it. I tend to agree with her. She is the executive director of the Crime Prevention Research Center. We'll be right back.
Rick Munn on TNT Radio.
Dan Andrews is back for a historic third term as Premier of Victoria. Absolute shocker, or is it? There's a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. There's some celebration that he's back again. People are talking about vote rigging. People are talking about one thing and another. I do believe that the Victorians are suffering from extreme Stockholm syndrome. They have developed an emotional bond with their oppressor slash captor, which is Dan Andrews, over the last 2 to 3 years. They think they're united behind him rather than divided under him. The IPA's John Roscombe says Victorians have 4 more years of suffering after Premier Dan Andrews led Labour to a majority in the state election. So 4 more years of suffering potentially is on the way. Victoria has chosen a premier who led the state into the biggest debt of any state or territory in the country. And don't forget, locked them down for one of the longest, most oppressive periods in Australian, if not world history.
Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Laurie from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
The U.S. government is predicting the average household is going to spend hundreds of dollars more on gas this year.
Crazy, isn't it?
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All righty, folks. This hour, for the remainder of this hour, we are joined by Nikki Gosar. She is the executive director of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And that is a research center dedicated to conducting academic quality research on the relationship between laws regulating ownership or use of guns, crime, and public safety. She has a recent article that came out towards the middle of the month, and it was entitled, If You Want to Deter Murders, Bring Back the Death Penalty. That was co-written with John Lott, who's also been here on the show. Nikki, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come on. And I tend to agree with bringing back the death penalty, and I've said that before, and people go, oh my God, and they're aghast. But you make a really good argument for why that is. I think one of the things that people often think about in regards to the death penalty is they've heard stories, well, wait a minute, what about the people that were falsely accused? So, and then, you know, DNA evidence shows that they were innocent. But you point out in the article that that doesn't really happen very often.
Correct. Yeah, that's extremely rare. And, you know, I write in the article about I myself am a victim of a violent crime. My husband was murdered right in front of me by a man who was stalking me. And this was in a busy restaurant. He was shot and killed in front of everyone by this man. And there was solid evidence. I'm talking, he was tackled at the scene. So he got caught there. I saw him do it. The murder weapon's there. When the police searched his vehicle, they found two more guns, ammunition, a baseball bat, binoculars, gloves, rope, and a knife. You know, there were security cameras rolling. My husband's murder was on film. In cases like that, where there is absolutely no doubt that the person did this, I absolutely think the death penalty should be on the table. One example I gave where I think it's of a real benefit is take Dylan Roof, the Charleston, South Carolina church shooter. He murdered 9 people and Roof agreed to plead guilty on all 9 counts and he accepted a life sentence. Look, without a possible death penalty, there would have been no reason to do.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, because here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past and when it breaks.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, we went to a little ad break early. We had a little tech issue. Nikki Gozer is my guest for this hour. She is the executive director of the Crime Prevention Research Center, and she was telling us the horrible story that her husband was gunned down in front of her by a person who had been stalking them. And I believe that the DA in that county just did not want to have the death penalty on the table.
That is correct. Yeah. And, you know, I begged and pleaded, please, you know, put the death penalty on the table because, you know, he could have pled guilty and there wouldn't have been a trial and he would have stayed in prison forever. And I wouldn't have had to go through a very traumatic, you know, trial. It causes a lot of anxiety, a lot of nightmares as you prepare, you know, as a victim, you're a witness, you go in there, you have to testify, you have to give a victim impact statement, and it can be very, very stressful. It would have been very helpful if the death penalty had been on the table. Then that gives him, you know, an incentive to plead guilty, and that saves victims and their families from a lot of anxiety and extra trauma.
But here's what I don't understand. In that state, I believe the death penalty was allowed. So how does a district attorney have the right to just say, no, we're not going to have that type of punishment in what we're seeking, even though it's allowed in our state?
You know, I just think maybe he was a Democrat. You know, there are 15 points criteria here in Tennessee, and only one has to be met in order to seek the, you know, for it to fit the criteria. And, you know, one of the things they say in that criteria is was the death cruel? Well, I'd say someone being shot 7 times with a .45 caliber in front of their spouse is pretty darn cruel, don't you?
Yes. Agreed.
And the second is, were other people's lives put in danger at the time of the murder? Well, that's a no-brainer. There were 50 people in the middle of a busy restaurant with multiple shots fired. So he could have used it. But, you know, the death penalty being used, it's really up to the prosecutor and how they choose to interpret the law and if they're willing to based on the facts.
Okay. Well, and also before the break, you were speaking about Dylan Roof, he basically pled to life in jail in order to not get the death penalty. So, you know, if the death penalty hadn't been there, there would have been no leverage to get him to do that.
Exactly. And, you know, the death penalty, it has a deterrence effect. Most peer-reviewed academic research, it shows a large deterrence effect. I mean, it ranges from 8 to 18 fewer murders for each additional execution. I mean, that's significant. Those are innocent lives. And you can see that deterrence effect in the efforts of many of these murderers to actually avoid the death penalty. You know, Dylan Roof, he took the plea bargain for life. And Nicholas Cruz, you know, the Parkland school shooter, he fought against the death penalty in his trial. You know? Kind of remarkable given that mass shooters are often suicidal.
Yes. And at the end of it, they know that either they will be taken out or they will likely take themselves out. And then these times when they do get apprehended, they don't want the death penalty. But the other thing about the death penalty that is odd is that it takes so long for inmates that are on death row to eventually be executed. Because one of the things you point out in the article is that 32 of our 50 states have inmates on death row right now, but only 8 states of the federal government have held execution since 2020. It takes almost 20 years per inmate from sentencing to execution.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yes.
That is ridiculous. Especially in cases where there's solid evidence.
Yeah, I don't understand that, because here's the deal. If you're avoiding the death penalty because it's inhumane and extraordinary, well, isn't keeping them alive for 20 years, knowing that they're going to be put to death, isn't that rather cruel? And the other thing is, I hate to be this nuts and bolts, but some of these people, if you keep them in life in prison, I don't know what it costs per inmate, but I know that it costs a lot. And the sooner that you do it, the sooner you save money. I know that sounds terrible, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Not death penalty, just regular prison time here in the state of Tennessee. I think the last time I checked, it was like, I don't know, $43,000 a year
right.
per inmate.
Yeah. So yeah. 40 times 20, you know, what is that? $800,000, almost $1 million they're going to spend on somebody they're going to eventually kill.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's ridiculous. There's one quote that I absolutely love. This guy's name, his name is John McAdams. He's a professor that testified before the U.S. Congress. And, of course, he was pro capital punishment. And his quote is, if we execute murderers and there is, in fact, no deterrent effect, we have killed a bunch of murderers. If we fail to execute murderers and doing so would in fact have deterred other murders, we have allowed the killing of a bunch of innocent victims. I would much rather risk the former. This, to me, is not a tough call.
Yes, and I'm not sure that I fully understand the arguments to not have capital punishment, with the exception of the one that we brought up earlier. Is like people sometimes think that people are wrongly accused and then they get sentenced to death, and you point out that that's extremely rare. So what other arguments against it is there?
There really isn't. I mean, people that are against the death penalty, they say, you know, things like, well, if you think abortion is wrong, then how can you support the death penalty? Well, it's completely different. That's an innocent, to me, at least, that's an innocent little child,
yes.
You know, that has not done anything wrong. A murderer has done a lot wrong.
Agreed. Another thing that I think people talk about is they view the death penalty as being racist and that it is unfairly applied more to Black Americans than white Americans. But you point out that that's not the case either in the article.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's very rare for DNA evidence to show an innocent person was wrongly sentenced. And yeah, there's actually more whites that are executed.
Yeah, I mean, the deal is some people, the crimes that they commit are so horrendous that, what are you rehabilitating at that point? What is the point of keeping them alive in a system where they are not going to go free again? But unfortunately, there are some places like here in California right now where we have district attorneys who don't want to prosecute anything, and they're just letting people go free right off the bat. So it's even beyond the death penalty, there just seems to be this loosening of punishment for crimes in the United States.
Yeah, I think we have become extremely lax on violent crime. I've seen this all over the country. I've seen it here in my state of Tennessee, and I think part of the problem is, like Tennessee, for instance, we are a red state. However, all of the major cities, you know, I'm talking Chattanooga, Memphis, Nashville, Knoxville, they're all blue cities. They're controlled by Democrats. The criminal justice system is controlled by Democrats, and they tend, not all, but they most tend to be very lenient on crime and even violent crime.
I am from Texas. I live in LA now, but Texas is the same way. The major urban centers are blue. And as this loosening effect is occurring in the prosecution and punishment of violent crime seems to be on the upswing, and they deny that in many of these cities, that that crime is increasing.
Oh, it's absolutely increasing. And look, when you're doing nothing but catch and release, and it's just a revolving door of letting criminals back out into society, you're playing Russian roulette with society. And I think they should be held accountable.
I agree. And it just, the death penalty is one of those things where I think that maybe, people put, I'm at a loss. I mean, there are some things that are done that are so horrendous. There is no rehabilitation that's going to be created for that person. They no longer really serve a purpose in the fabric of our community. I don't know what you do with them other than spend taxpayers' money on their lifelong incarceration.
Right. I don't believe they'll ever be... those types of people, I don't think will ever be rehabilitated unless it is someone that was extremely young and they committed, you know, a murder. You know, sometimes you'll see young kids get involved in gang activity and, you know, they'll do something really horrible when they're very young, 17, 18 years old, you know, maybe 30 years from then, 20 years, 25 years, maybe. If they can prove that they are rehabilitated and go through serious programs and help, you know, other inmates coming in to turn their life around and really make a real effort over decades, then yeah, maybe someone can be rehabilitated and become, you know, a good standing member of society. But
well,
even
also,
that's rare, I think, you know.
I think the kind of case that you're talking about, also that should be considered by the prosecution when they're if it is a young person who fell into, you know, the wrong crowd or whatever, things like that, that should be, this would be a time when as a prosecutor I would say, well, all right, we're not going to pursue the death penalty in this one because we see the person got in as a youth in a situation that was maybe out of their hands or whatever. But I don't know, I think you take it that on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the man that murdered my husband, he was 43 years old. That's a grown man. That is a grown, developed adult that should know better.
So, that man now is what...
rehabilitated.
No. And what was his punishment? Well, I'm assuming that he did get convicted.
He went to trial after 3 years. That's another injustice of the justice system. I tell people it's just a system. There's no real justice to it. After three years, you know, having all of that evidence, and it took 3 years, but he, it was a bench trial. You know, that means no jury, just a judge. And it was a liberal judge. And, of course, they bring in mental health experts, and they testified he has delusional disorder and erotomania. And I guess the judge felt sorry for him and ended up dropping it from first degree
what?
To the lesser offense of only second degree. And he was only sentenced to 23 years in prison at 100% with no parole. But that was a lie. Victims are lied to every single day in criminal courts across the nation. When they give a sentence, the victim's thinking, okay, that's how long they're going to serve. No, it's not, because these murderers are allowed early release good behavior credits. So this man doesn't even have to serve 20 years. Right now, as you and I speak, he is set to be released early in only 6 more years. And that is terrifying for me, because this man has continued to stalk me from prison. He's been sending twisted love letters for years to me. Now, he's just been charged by the feds for federal stalking. That's a felony. But the max sentence for that is only 5 years. So he's still getting out. Yeah, this is what our criminal justice system does.
That is horrible. And, you know, I hate to say this, but I know that you already are quite aware of it. So the whole time that he's in prison, he's thinking about you and he's thinking about getting out. So, I would be very concerned. And if he's being currently charged with this digital stalking, or what was the term you used for it?
In general, it's known as federal, you know, stalking.
Okay.
It's so interstate. He used the mail, so the U.S. Postal Service.
Understood. So if he's charged for that, and it's obvious that he's doing it, and they sentenced him for it, that would not be allowed to run concurrently, I hope.
Yeah, I hope that it will be an additional 5 years tacked on to the sentence he's already serving. But you never know what they're going to do. You know, it's a shame that victims have to go through everything that I've been through. I mean, it took forever just to get him charged with the federal stalking. I had to hire attorneys. I had to go to the media. I had to jump through all kinds of hoops. And finally, he got charged, but there's other things like statute of limitations, you know, that came into play. He should have been charged with 9 felonies, but he was only charged with 1. So, you know, the system is really set up more to help the criminals than to help the victims. And I find that absolutely disgusting. I think that people need to get out and vote for people that are going to care about justice in this country. They need to care about victims. People need to get more involved, because what I'm seeing across the nation, there are prisoner rights activists, and they're very well organized. They're very well funded. And I'm not seeing a lot of action out there or advocates on the behalf of victims.
Right. I think that people assume that they're there, but they don't know if they're there. And it doesn't surprise me that you're seeing all of these prisoner rights advocates, but it does surprise me that, unfortunately, there's not so many advocates for the victims. And we're going to take a break. I'm speaking with Nikki Gosar. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Crime Prevention Research Center that she is the executive director of, and how they probably, help and give advice to victims. This is TNT's Deprogram. We will be right back.
I try to avoid the headlong rush into full-throated support or criticism of someone. The former is how you get your heart broken, and the latter is how you can destroy your own credibility. It's not wishy-washy to take a wait-and-see attitude and to compliment the good, criticize the bad. Still haven't made up my mind about Elon Musk, but I'm telling you, the longer time goes on, the more I like what I see. He tweeted yesterday, "This is a battle for the future of civilization. If free speech is lost, even in America, tyranny is all that lies ahead." He's absolutely correct, and Elon has been a staunch supporter of free speech, which is why the left has lost their ever-loving minds, even going so far as buying a car from a company started by Nazis to protest Twitter being Nazi or something. They're also going crazy over him having a pistol on his nightstand. I, on the other hand, was more concerned by the 4 cans of caffeine-free Diet Coke. Elon, baby, that stuff will kill you. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
In this day and age, everybody deserves the right to access phone and internet services. Whether you're from regional, rural or remote Australia, the Regional Tech Hub can independently assist with providing advice on connectivity options in your local area, or work with you and your service provider to resolve outstanding issues with phone and internet. And our service is absolutely free. Find out more by visiting regionaltechhub.org.au or by calling 1300 081 029. RTH is an initiative of the Australian Government delivered by the NFF.
Listen up!
Now listen, we gotta talk.
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Nikki Gosar is my guest. She is the Executive Director of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And Nikki, tell me about the Research Center. Is this something that you founded?
Oh, no. That was founded by Dr. John Locke Jr. He is famous for his book, More Guns, Less Crime. And he also wrote several other books, The Bias Against Guns and At the Brink and several others. But you see him a lot on Fox News.
Okay. And because I'm on the site right now, you've got a lot of articles that you guys link to, many of them written by John Locke. And do you help advise victims, people like yourself that were party to these horrible events, and then try to give them advice and point them in directions of people who can advise them?
Yes, I do. I've gotten to know a lot of victims of violent crime over the years. And I travel across the country and I go testify and try to convince legislators to stand up for victims' rights. And like here in my state of Tennessee last year, I helped get a new law on the books. It's the Lifetime Order of Protection. And I'm the very first Tennessean to have been granted the Lifetime Order of Protection because of my stalker. And
what does that mean exactly?
Due process. Some people freak out because they hear, oh, no, order of protection for life. People are going to lose their rights. And I'm like, no, you need to read the bill. It explains clearly that you must be a victim of a violent crime, and the offender, they must have been convicted of that crime. I'm talking the worst. I'm talking murder, rape, you know, serious assault. And I tell people, look, it's only a piece of paper. You really need to go get your handgun carry permit. You need to get training, you know, learn about situational awareness, because, you know, pieces of paper get walked through every single day, and you cannot and should not completely rely on that. However, should you find yourself having to one day protect yourself and your loved ones because you fear for your life against this person, that piece of paper can act as your defense in court.
And explain what this is exactly. So is it in relation to you, in relation to a single individual, meaning your stalker, this piece of legislation?
Yes.
So future,
I went other people petitioned before the judge. Yeah. So anyone who's been a victim of a violent crime out there, the convicted offender, if they want to get a lifetime order of protection against them, they can petition a court for that. And of course, it's up to the judge based on the evidence and what is said in court. A judge can always, you know, choose to dismiss it. But if it's a viable case and it's needed, the judge will do what my judge did, and they will grant it.
And is that only in Tennessee, or do other states have that?
There are a few other states that have something that is the equivalent. I believe Montana has something quite similar, but there are still states that need to come along with that. Like Kentucky has taken up the legislation this year. I believe New York is taking it up this next legislative session, and I may be going to testify there. I hear stories from people, and so many victims feel the way that I do, but so many of them feel like they don't have a voice, you know, or they don't know how to make change. And I try to help them with that.
Well, this particular legislation that is serving you right now, I think there would be a lot of people who would like to have that protection. And I think it's a good thing. So I hope that more states adopt it.
Yes, you and I both. I'm working on it.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. What else are you guys looking at crime research right now that we should be knowing about Crime Prevention Research Center?
Sure. Well, anyone that is interested in crime rates across the country and what laws work and what laws don't, and they're interested in concealed carry permit data, if they want to know about background checks, we have all kinds of research. You can go on the first page. There's topics listed over on the right-hand side. And you can just scroll down and look at everything that we work on. You know, we have concealed handguns allowed in schools. If you want to know which state capitals allow concealed handguns to be carried, we'll tell you exactly which capitals they are. We talk about mass public shootings. We give data on, you know, all of that stuff. If you want the true data, we've got it. And, of course, all of our opinion pieces on various subjects that have to do with crime are there as well. We also point to the gun control lies, and we talk about the dangers of gun-free zones. So we really point out how so many of these gun control laws actually make things easier for the criminals and more difficult for good law-abiding people. Gun control laws really only affect the law-abiding. Generally, those penalties don't mean anything to someone who's already willing to commit murder.
Right. Right. This is something that we talk about a lot, and I don't know how people don't make that connection. But yeah, if you're willing to commit a violent crime, then precautions, legal precautions, don't mean much to you in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the restaurant where my husband was murdered, it was a gun-free zone. I was a handgun carry permit holder, still am to this day, but because it was a gun-free zone, I followed the law that night, and I left my legal handgun that I normally carried for self-defense, I left it locked in my vehicle that night because I did not want to break the law. The man who was stalking me did not have a permit to carry and brought a gun into a gun-free zone illegally. He went there to murder my husband. What is that gun control law? What does that mean to him? Nothing. If he's willing to commit murder.
Right. And I, he probably did not even know that there was, it was a gun-free zone. None of that even matters to him. He came there with a singular horrible purpose. And you, on the other hand, you know, were doing, you were the law-abiding citizen, and I hate to be so cynical, but sometimes I do think that laws are just for people who will obey them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
And victims seem to have less and less rights as time goes on, but with groups like yours, hopefully we can change that. And I love the fact that people like you are speaking out and taking up this cause, and because there's so many people, I think that they've just kind of given up. They don't think that they have a voice, and the table is tilted against them, and somebody does have to speak up.
Yeah, it can be frustrating sometimes because, you know, you just feel like, sometimes you feel like you're hitting a brick wall, but ultimately I've just had to tell myself, look, you cannot give up. You cannot give up. And I was convinced, like, you know, the Democrats are going to vote no for this lifetime order of protection. But you know what? Everyone voted yes. Everyone through the entire process. Absolutely no one voted no. So you never know, you know, if you're willing to get out there and speak up, and anyone can do it. Anyone. If you have the willpower and you're a really stubborn person like I am, you can do it.
Well, every now and then, common sense does peek through a little bit and people will agree on something. And something like this, a victim's right situation, it's like, you're a pretty terrible politician if you would vote against that, because it's just from a politically strategic point of view, it behooves you to vote for it, not against it. I would think.
Yeah, you would think.
Of course, that doesn't always seem to matter these days, it seems. But yeah, your website, the crimeresearch.org website, has a lot of information. You've got posts, you've got the research, you've got op-eds, and, you know, also people can donate if they want to help out. So, and this is a very worthy topic. Are you guys also on social media?
Yes, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. Yes, absolutely.
All right. I'm looking at some of your other articles here. The anti-gun movement has been very strong. And I see you're talking about pop culture here, too. I mean, they do perpetuate a lot of this stuff. I've seen this a lot in television shows. One of your top articles that you have right now, TV shows bias on guns, CBS's FBI Most Wanted shows a concealed handgun permit holders doing more harm than benefit. I've seen that are similar things in a lot of television shows of late, where unfortunately they've portrayed Caucasians or Trump-like supporter kind of characters or something as being the real dangerous people, when in fact that's a stereotype just as much as anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that we try to do, the mainstream media does not ever cover this, but you know, justifiable use of force, where good law-abiding people use guns to save innocent lives, that happens every single day. But the mainstream media does not want to report on that. Now, some local media will. So we go out and we compile all of those stories we can find, and then we put them up on our website, because I want people to see that this actually happens. Good people are able to save innocent lives every day in this country. A good guy with a gun was there.
Yeah, they don't
stop someone.
They don't care for that narrative. They don't want that out there too much, but it does happen and people do notice. And, you know, I think at this point, most people have caught on. A lot of people have made up their minds one way or the other, but it goes on and on. And groups like yours help us find more information. And your particular story, as tragic as it is, I'm grateful that you share it with people and have been able to make something out of this terrible tragedy that happened in your life.
Yeah, the one thing that I tell people, especially women, is while I don't want you to be paranoid, I do want you to be prepared, because unfortunately, evil is out there and it can choose to visit you. I learned that evil can visit you right in the middle of a busy restaurant. And, you know, you've got to be able to protect yourself and your loved one. You are your own first responder.
I have two young daughters, and you know, I go over this with them all the time. When I purchased a gun, one in particular was very disturbed by the whole thing, but I was like, we live in LA, man. It's like, I need some protection for us. But I also try to express to them, because they're old enough to go out and stuff now. One of them is a senior in high school, one of them's in college, and I'm just like, you know, be aware of where you're at. They're like, we will, Dad. I'm like, just seriously, you and your friends need to be aware of what's going on, because unfortunately there's some terrible people in our midst.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so sad. I hear some of my friends, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 46. And I remember back, you know, in the early 80s, my parents would be like, go out and play, Nick.
Yeah,
just make sure you're home before dark, you know? And
you
can't do that nowadays, it seems like, you know?
It's a different time, and there's a lot of things going on, and it's getting crazier all the time. But Nikki, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. You guys go to crimeresearch.org and you can find out more about her work with them and what they stand for. Nikki, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you. You take care.
All right. We appreciate it. All right, folks. Well, we've got another hour, and we will be speaking with Jimmy Jenkins in the second hour. He'll be coming to us from the panhandle of Florida, and we will be talking about how a criminal defense lawyer becomes a hemp farmer. We'll be back.